Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Testing. Steve, are you on? Can you hear me? Can you?
No, there we
are. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, no,
we're all good. And you can hear me, right?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Game Classy. I am your host, Joe, and with me as always my co-host, Steve.
Good times.
Good times. Good times. So, yeah.
I don't know, man.
Steve's just sitting there playing his video games.
Don't look at me, man.
He's like, I'm just saying.
I got a first place record to keep.
What are you playing? Are you playing Champies?
Champies.
Yeah. You having your little figures battle on the boards?
That's not Champies. That's Realm Wars.
But Champies has the little figures that pops up.
It's supposed to have some AR stuff, but I haven't seen. I don't think they've implemented it yet.
Oh, they haven't implemented
the one that's like all about the AR stuff is Realm Wars, because you can.
Have you been playing Realm Wars?
I have not. It's not really my cup of tea, but it's not my cuppa.
What is Realm Wars?
It's an RTS.
Oh, it's RTS,
but
okay.
It's Sigmar, and one of the gimmicks is it's an augmented reality RTS. You can, I have not tested this, but supposedly you can set up a table and like put shit on the table, and like the game, like it'll read the surface area of your table, and like the figures will interact with what you've put on the table.
Uh-huh.
So like if you have like a plate, they'll step up onto it when they're fighting.
Is there after you defeat your bad guys, does it go da na 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 da 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 na da na?
No, but there is Final Fantasy Brave Exvius, which does that.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, of course it's Final Fantasy, duh.
Yeah.
So anyway, one thing that I wanted to talk about before we started was. What, Steve, what is alternating activation? Something that we meant to talk about on like the last three podcasts.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Someone on the Facebook page actually asked us to go, you guys always talk about alternating activation. Can you explain what that is?
All right. So alternating activation is very simple. I set my army up and I have 10 units. Joe sets up his army up and he has 10 units. I get to take one of my units and perform whatever its actions are. So it moves, et cetera, so on and so forth. And then my turn stops. Joe gets to go, moves one of his units.
Yes.
And then you keep going back and forth like that until everyone has moved each of their units once.
Or has activated their units at least once. Hence the term activation.
Yes.
Alternating activation. Games Workshop has never truly implemented that in any of its major games.
I don't think they've had. Do they have it in any game? I can't remember anyone.
No.
I don't think they have.
Not even in the skirmish games, because the skirmish games, it's all I move, you move.
Yeah.
The closest that they ever came to it was Lord of the Rings, and which they implemented into Age of Sigmar, which is sometimes the I move all my stuff, then you move all your stuff, then I move all my stuff, you move all your stuff.
Age of Sigmar combat. The way you do Age of Sigmar combat is alternating activations.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
It's the closest they come. They panic anytime they get close to alternating activation, and they immediately scale it back, going, oh, Jesus Christ, we can't do this.
Although I do think alternating activations is not really that great for big-scale war games. Like, I think
alternating activation could not work in Warhammer Fantasy Battles.
Yeah. Or like Warmaster wouldn't work.
No.
Anything that's like big scale is not going to.
Big block unit combat.
Yeah, big block unit combat, the alternating is not good. But if you have, you know, any skirmish game, and it would work great for Age of Sigmar.
And it would actually, the fact that they have not put it into 8th edition for 40K is so mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, especially because 40K is so shooting heavy. Like, one side can just wipe the other out with just a really good turn of dice rolls.
Yeah. And
with alternating activation, you'd never be able to table someone in one shot before they had a chance to retaliate.
With all of the changes that they made to 40K for 8th edition from 7th to 8th, because let's face it, 7th was just an extension of 3rd edition. Like, all this 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th were all just extended. 7th was just 3rd edition with a bunch of patches put on it. 7th edition was a bunch of patches that had on 3rd. 8th edition is kind of the one time that they really, truly changed the game dramatically. And I think that they were just too afraid to do something as dramatic as that.
Alternate activations are also really nice because they give you especially in games that are heavy shooting like 40K, because it gives you, you have very tactical decisions to make about when to shoot to with what, and then you can also, you know, you're like, I really want to try and wipe that unit out before it shoots me, so that's where I'm going to shoot.
Exactly. And, I mean, trust me, I've talked about
it's just like Age of Sigmar combat. Like, if you've played Age of Sigmar and done a combat phase, all of the decisions you make when you're doing the combat phase in Age of Sigmar, it's like that for the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've never played bolt action, but bolt action is the epitome of a shooting alternating action army game.
But isn't there like a randomization to the action? Isn't it not truly alternating? Because you like
you draw dice.
Okay, yeah. So it's like, because you can possibly go a bunch of times in a row, but it's random.
Yeah. So I mean, but that's what's nice about it.
That would tilt me.
But what's nice about it is that there's ways that, of course, you can make it more in your favor. The more dice you have in the cup, the more you can go at a time. The less dice you have, and the more elite army you have, which is better at killing things and better at surviving, the less likely you are to go. Mm. I mean, It's a historical game in the terms of it's the bigger problem that happened with bolt action was is that it became too much of a competitive game, which is great, but the rule set never adapted to become a competitive game. Mm. So it's like you want it to be competitive, but at the same time, it's written by a bunch of British guys who are like, oh no, it's just I'm chuffed to print my and to paint my SAS officer.
The best part of waking up is alternating activations in your cup.
Yeah. So you can, there's lots, it's a really fun game. So if you play on a much more relaxed basis, it's great. And the alternating activation really makes it fun because you're like, oh, I just need this fucking dice pool.
Would you
I need
say
this
that you are
dice pool.
Chuffed about alternating activation?
Oh, I am so chuffed. Steve knows because I literally text him every time I see someone use the word chuffed on Facebook.
I still think you should have a Facebook page. That's the chuffed archive.
It's a Tumblr. It's got to be a Tumblr,
that's
Steve.
That's fine. Whatever. You just need to do it.
Chuffed.tumblr.
Yeah. You just need to get it done.
Yes. And because it's like the word chuffed has metamorphosized into something that it's completely not.
It just doesn't. Well, but that's the thing. It's now everything.
It's now everything.
Yeah.
Everything is chuffed and nothing is chuffed.
That's right.
It's the stupidest word known to mankind. It really, I don't know why it angers me so much.
Chuffed.
Why does it anger me, Steve? Why?
I don't know.
Why?
Probably because it's British and you have an irrational hatred of the UK.
I have irrational hatred of the British language.
Yeah, I mean, because you speak it?
No, I speak English.
Hmm.
British is something completely. I speak American, Steve.
You speak American.
What's the quote? A language is just a dialect with an army and a navy. I think that's the quote.
That's a good quote.
Yeah. I can't tell you who said it.
Some guy.
Probably British. He was probably chuffed.
Some
he was probably
douche.
Chuffed that he came up with that quote.
Yeah, he was very chuffed about it.
So anyway, so today I wanted to focus down a little bit more on some gaming stuff because, as I was told yesterday at a bar, they really enjoyed our conversation we had in the last podcast, but we were completely ignorant about everything that we were talking about.
What?
Which
conversation?
Like, metal, Castlevania, the Muppets.
I know everything about metal in Castlevania. What the hell are you talking about?
I really know everything about metal.
About
you're
metal?
You're not a metal head.
I know everything about metal.
You know everything about metal.
I know everything about metal.
Yes.
Anyone who thinks I'm wrong about metal is wrong.
Hey, you do know a lot about metal. I was going to say, you sound like every metalhead that I know.
See? Exactly. No.
And actually, the nicest thing is that most metalheads, I would say...
The Muppets? I have no fucking idea. Yeah. So you got me in that one. Although, wait, no. No, we were talking about our consensus that A Muppet's Christmas Carol and Treasure Island suck.
Suck, yeah.
We're not wrong about that. We're 100% correct. That dude at the bar is wrong.
Take that, Mick. So I just wanted to point out, though, that...
Although the Muppets movie was really good with...
Jason Segel?
Yeah.
Muppets? Yeah, I like that one a lot, too. Yeah. I really like Muppets Most Wanted. I know a lot of people were iffy on it.
It wasn't as good as the first one, but it was fine.
Yeah. It's just Great Muppet Caper 2.0.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to say, though, is that most metalheads, like, let's say 90% of all metalheads I've ever met are the nicest people in the world.
Like, generally true.
There are, I shouldn't say that, I'd say 75%.
Yeah.
Because there's a 25% that are just dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're very nice people, generally, but there's a 25% that are, like, just dicks. And usually they have, like, an 88 tattoo somewhere on their body, too.
Generally.
So, yeah. And most metalheads don't want to associate with that. It's like punks.
Yeah.
Like you know, if you're into punk music, generally really nice people. Then you get the Nazi skinheads. And
you get Nazi
like,
punks.
Yeah, you get Nazi punks.
There's
you're
also
like,
the Nazi metalheads.
You're like, Nazi skinheads, fuck off.
Yeah, that's right. Nazi punks, fuck off.
Nazi punks, fuck off.
Yeah.
Ooh, I got some eBay sales. Okay, so I wanted to bring it back to gaming so we don't have to suffer through the conversation of, like, what we don't know about the Castlevania mythology.
I know Castlevania.
You know, I don't. I'll be the first to admit. It's like when people tell me, like, well, according to A Link to the Past, the mythology of Legend of Zelda, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. It's a fucking video game.
Zelda's a mess.
Yeah. I mean, it's even still, it's like, there's not a really mythology. I mean, it's a bunch of shit that people kind of put together in their head after playing a video game.
It's true.
Yeah, there's not too... I mean, you could make your own headcanon about a lot of that stuff,
I believe the official canon of Zelda is that it's a headcanon. It's just, it's the same... The reason,
or is it Ganon?
Well, the reason it's the same story, it's because it's supposed to be, like...
Every culture's interpretation
right,
of
they're
the
telling
Zelda
the same
myth.
Story,
yeah.
Right. It's like over and over, it's the same story being retold. Yeah. Like as they would say in Soul Calibur, the legend never dies.
Why is Darth Vader in this legend? What's going on? Why is Freddy Krueger fighting Darth Vader in Soul Calibur?
That would actually be pretty cool.
I think, couldn't you do that at one point?
Freddy Krueger was in Mortal Kombat 9.
Oh, okay.
And he was busted. He was banned. He was too strong.
But wasn't there, like, didn't Soul Calibur do, like, a bunch of, like,
there was,
fucking crazy people?
Soul Calibur 4, I think, one... There was one, the Xbox character was Yoda, and the PlayStation character was Darth Vader.
Okay, so I was right. Darth Vader was in
yes,
Soul Calibur.
Darth Vader
at one point.
Was in
okay.
Soul Calibur.
Yeah, because can't you, like, do, like, a bunch of customizable characters now in Soul Calibur?
You can, and they're ruining ranked mode right now because they messed the hitboxes up. So you can take the character Astaroth, who's, like, got a very strong moveset, but he's big. So his drawback is that he's huge. But you can make him very small.
Is Hitbox like just a fighting game thing, or is it just a Soul Calibur thing?
Hitbox is a gaming thing. So hitbox is the area where you would take damage if something hits you.
Yeah, that's what I kind of figured. Yeah, I know, but of all people, my mind immediately went to strike zone. Like, you just got a bigger strike zone.
Yeah.
Which is baseball, of course, which is weird for me to come up with that.
People say there's hitbox and hurtbox, and, like, one is the offensive version, same difference.
Yeah.
But, like, so Astaroth, like, his hitbox is very large because he's a big character.
Yeah.
So that's one of the drawbacks.
But he has tiny hands.
Maybe. I don't know. No, he's got giant hands. But you can make a custom character who's incredibly small but has all of Astaroth's moves and like levels of damage. So yeah, they're currently really fucked up. And like attacks will miss characters that they shouldn't. I don't mind the custom characters. I think they're fun, and seeing people's creativity is kind of absurd, like seeing all of the stuff that people have pulled out. But it should not be in a competitive mode, like ranked. Like casual, sure. Give me all of the busted, crazy shit you want. But like, it should not be in a ranked mode that has like a scoring system.
I only know that term just because one of the memes I saw was that the main reason to lose weight is to decrease the size of your hitbox.
That's right.
Yeah, so.
Decreased hitbox.
Decrease your size of your hitbox. That's what I'm trying to do right now.
It's a buff.
It's a buff. So anyway, I wanted to talk about. The base. We also, before we end though today, don't forget we have to talk about what's going on with White Wolf right now.
I mean, it's not really. We can just go. It's super fast.
Okay.
They used the IRL actually happening currently genocides in Chechnya as like background fluff for their game, and people got pissed about it.
Yeah. I think not necessarily the story of White Wolf doing that is not the story. It's the fan reaction is always the story. Like what a gaming company does is never the story. It's the community
is the
story.
People were pissed about them using a currently going on active genocide.
But then, I think as me, you know, as I said on this podcast before, pretty liberal guy. I think that's, you know, it's a pretty okay thing to be people upset about. You know, lots of people dying in real life. That's kind of, I mean, you go back in time, you go even like, 30-40 years, you want to do something into a game, it's historical record, you know, like, it's like, okay, I get it, but when it's just happening now, it's like,
when it's current events,
yeah,
we want to shy away from current events.
Yeah, it's like, you know what, guys, maybe this isn't this isn't kosher. Let's just back off of this one a little bit.
Just wait.
Yeah. So White Wolf of course apologizes for it, you know, as that, you know, they're like, hey, look, sorry about it.
It's a bit tone deaf.
Yeah, it was a bit tone deaf. And then you have, of course, you have the people who are still jumping on him about it. Like, you can just say, like, all right, they apologized for it. It's fine. If you're really butthurt about it, I shouldn't say butthurt. If you're really angry about what's going on, don't buy any more of their books for a while. Boo, a little bit of a protest. But then you have the other people on the other end that is just like,
well, fuck you. We're going to genocide more people.
Exactly. I don't see anything wrong with modern genocide. It's like, what the fuck is going on?
They don't.
I know,
so.
And it's White Wolf, so it's full of edgelords to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, it's...
And because it's White Wolf and they were popular, like, at the bracket of time they were the most popular, you're going to have people who are the perfect age to be fucking Richard Spencer douches.
Yeah. Oh God, I don't want to get into this too much, but
I mean, that was it. Like, that's the whole story.
Who's the wiener dude who does that Turning Point USA shit?
Oh, Shapiro?
Ben Shapiro?
Or Sharpio?
Is it Ben Shapiro?
It's Ben Shapiro.
Okay,
yeah.
So I just want to, as a person, he's my age, right? And he grew up literally in Illinois, close to me. As a guy, it's like I kind of. No, I shouldn't say it this way, but I just feel kind of somewhat responsible that at some point I never found this guy while growing up and punched him in the face, like as like a 16 or 17 year old.
It's unfortunate.
And just told him to stop it. Like I could have stopped him at some point, but
you
I did not.
You could have punched baby Hitler.
I don't want to go that way. I don't want to do that comparison. That's too much. Too much, Steve.
I didn't say you could have stopped him. I said you could have punched him.
Yeah.
Like, think about that. Think about that. You can go back in time, but you could only punch him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's probably what turned Hitler into what he was, is a bunch of time travelers punching him when he was a kid.
He just keeps getting punched. It's like, you get one punch.
It's just like a line of people going through
time machine. It's like, there's the Hitler punch time machine. You go through time. You get to punch baby Hitler once.
It's just like a hole that opens up in space time.
And a fist comes out.
It's really weird to see.
There's all these photos of Hitler where there's fists coming out.
Yeah. But anyway,
yeah. Unfortunately, we can only send punches through time.
Yeah. So I mean, like, White Wolf is dealing with their issue right now, and it's providing many laughs.
Yeah.
Because it's not like White Wolf is sticking to their guns, saying like, no, we want to cover more genocides. Where are there more genocides going on around the world?
It was like. Someone was like, "Ooh, I can use this current event thing as like a weird background for my game," and it's kind of like,
I just don't understand. And it's like, I knew I should have predicted that this would happen eventually. That tabletop gaming, in terms of RPGs, and it hasn't really hit like war games too much, because I already think it's a little much. It's like how it's just become a battleground for the ideology war that goes on in America right now, right versus left, like. We should have just predicted that this would happen, because it already had happened in video games, and now it's just kind of happening in tabletop games as well, RPGs. And the reason why I say mini games is because I think it's already kind of right leaning.
It seems that the overwhelming majority of miniatures gamers are right wing Nazis.
It's like, oh, we're the space Nazi Catholics are the bad guy and are the good guys. That's the game we're playing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I see.
Yeah. So I don't think that there's going to be much of a battleground there, but it's RPG stuff. White Wolf is a perfect example of the microcosm of edgelords and, like, the extreme left as well. So
I wouldn't even say they're extreme. At this point, extreme left is slightly to the left of center right. Like, that's extreme left.
The extreme left is the center in Finland. So anyway, getting away from politics, I wanted to talk about the... State of Games Workshop. You know, we talk about Games Workshop a lot in the last few months, and that's because they're the main mover and shaker that's going on right now in the miniatures world, especially miniatures tabletop gaming. And it's the games that Steve and I are both currently playing, which is, as we always say, those are the games that we're going to talk about the most, are the games that we're currently playing. As far as I know, and as far as I've seen, Infinity's still chugging along. War Machine Hordes has tanked in terms of sales. But they're still kind of steady. They still have their player fan base, and they still have new stuff coming out. In fact, they've actually blipped on my radar recently with a couple of their new releases, which was interesting.
I wish the game was better, because that new faction is fucking sweet looking. What the fuck are they called? Not the conversions. They're like a mercenary spinoff. They've got like a really cool teal color for their
And they got like that
crucible,
and they got that trident type tank.
The Crucible Guard. That's what they are. Yeah. They're fucking sweet looking. Yeah. Very cool. I was like, oh, those guys look badass. Too bad that game is shit.
Yeah. Too bad everything about it has tanked horribly. and Dust.
Monsterpocalypse is supposed to be pretty good.
Monsterpocalypse is it's not selling great.
I saw some people playing it.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm really, and the miniatures are cool, and I always like the concept of Monsterpocalypse. I think Monsterpocalypse would have done better as a board game. Personally.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see them bring it back as a like actual like
mini game.
Like, yeah. It just seemed odd to me.
If it came out with let's say that it came out kind of like Shadespire, where it came like boards and buildings were in the core set along with your core starters, like that would be interesting to me. And then what they could sell is they could sell miniature and building expansion sets. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you want an industrial facility pack. So you get your industrial facility pack that comes with a bunch of stuff. You want to get your nuclear power pack, you know, and it comes with the nuclear power buildings and all the towers and everything. You could do that. And it comes with the boards or whatever. I think that would sell a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
And currently, they kind of have a weird sales pitch with it. I think it looks great, though. I mean, everything I've seen with it.
And figures all look really nice.
Yeah. And some of the paint schemes that I've seen with it look really nice. So.
Yeah.
And what was the other one? Dust. Dust, for some odd reason, still exists.
Still going.
For those who are...
Now I can have my Japanese schoolgirls versus Cthulhu mythos monsters.
It's true.
Finally.
I know. Actually, they're doing some pretty cool stuff with it lately. For those who don't follow that sort of thing, Dust is 1/35th scale, so it's way bigger. People who are like, oh, Japanese schoolgirls with katanas, they're huge figures.
Yeah, they're really big.
Which is fine if you just want to paint them and have them on your shelf, but if you actually want to use them in some sort of miniatures game, it's going to be really hard to do that. But
I mean, unless you're playing Dust.
And if you are interested in Dust and want to pick up shit cheap, go to Miniature Market right now, because they're having like their big Black Friday sale on Miniature Market.
Oh, they're selling the old Fantasy Flight stuff, right?
For dirt cheap.
Yeah.
I'm talking like tanks for $5.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if you just want some like tanks to put around your table, go vroom, 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 vroom. Like, you could do that for cheap.
Finally.
Yeah. I mean, it's just worth it for the big bases that they have on there, because they have like those really fucking huge bases. And if you want to use those for Fantasy or 40K, those cost you about $5 a piece anyway. So you might as well just buy the thing and get the tank with it. Make some wrecked train or something like that. All right, so let's talk about what's currently going on in the Games Workshop universe. We, of course, got their main games. We got 40K and Age of Sigmar, which Age of Sigmar is Warhammer Fantasy and in just a new way of style playing without big box games. Currently in 40K and Age of Sigmar, we're waiting on the General's Handbook 2019. It's a lull right now.
They just started doing feedback for Sigmar.
I saw that. They're asking for...
I told them to make Nagash 1,200 points. I think 1,200 points is a fair points cost for, like, with the way Nagash currently is, I think 1,200 points is fair.
Did you explain to them why? Or are you just like, Nagash should be 1,200 points?
No, I just said make Nagash 1,200 points.
Yeah.
There's nothing more that needs to be said. Anyone who's currently playing Age of Sigmar will be like, yeah, all right. Unless they use Nagash, because then they might be like, but wait, my free wins.
Which is always the case, but when people say, don't nerf this, it means that this is what's great in the game.
My free wins, no!
That's what they should be asking in the game is like, what character is awesome in your army? And if like, just look at that and just say that character needs to be nerfed.
That's the thing that that's really frustrating about Nagash is like, I think for Nagash notwithstanding, I feel that Age of Sigmar is really, really balanced, but Nagash is so unbalancing. It's very annoying to have one model like fuck up the game that hard.
Well, this is what I was saying that, and I kind of mentioned this a little bit to you, and I've thought about this. I've been stewing on this. Is that
stewing?
What Games Workshop needs to do is they need to take their online army builders and like apps, like the Age of Sigmar app, which is amazing. If you don't have it and you play Age of Sigmar, you need to get this fucking app because the army building on it is so easy. But what they need to do is they need to start looking at the lists that are saved if they have any way of drawing that. I'm sure they have a way of drawing that data.
They would need to look at, I think they would need to look at saved tournament lists, not just generic lists.
But I mean, like, just save lists and see what are common themes amongst them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they need to start nerfing their army, because they have this huge online data pool. I mean, let's figure if like 1,000 people are playing Age of Sigmar in America, and even 100 of them have this app, like, and I'm sure all competitive people who play the game have the app as well.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to pull those lists and like analyze, what do all of these have in common? Okay, is that overbalanced, and is that balanced, or is that overpowering?
I think just doing it off of lists though wouldn't really be super effective, because it doesn't like show, it doesn't show anything that's like a real value. Because like, for example, I've made you know, 70 plus just random lists all the time, and they don't, they also don't, they don't give you like results data. So like,
yeah, well, but I mean, that's what
it would show you, what like, I think having tracked tournament data would be useful.
Well, yeah,
like
I am hoping that they do that, because I've noticed it more and more in the way that I've just been like watching YouTube videos or whatever of tournaments, like, and tournament reviews, and like they show like the lists, and I'm like, oh, these are great. And I hope Games Workshop is seeing this, because a lot of it is
very similar. They're definitely paying attention, because you can just look at the, you can look at the 40K every time they do a FAQ.
Yeah.
You can see that they're very much paying attention to
every
tournaments.
Every time they're late with an FAQ, they're very much attention to tournaments.
Well, they are. You can tell, because each time they like they go like, oh, this is busted, and they tighten the screwdriver.
Yeah. Which is great. So they but yeah, so Age of Sigmar is currently very balanced. I don't see, at least the tournament list, I do see endless spells, or whatever those are called, the everlasting gobstopper spells.
They're endless spells.
Endless spells. I see occasionally one or two of them pop up in a tournament list. I don't think that they're overpowering in the tournament as much.
They're endless spells are good, but they're like... The biggest issue with endless spells, I played a game of Age of Sigmar not too long ago, and like I tried, my wizard spent the entire game trying to cast the same endless spell and failed every time.
Yeah.
So like that, you'll never, and endless spells other than the ones like the one that they nerfed, which was the mirror, because it was fucking broken, because it cast on 5 and Nagash has a +5 to cast, so Nagash can't fail to make the mirror appear. So very extreme examples notwithstanding, those spells will never be like busted, because they're like their appearance is random.
Yeah.
And in addition to their appearance being random, most of them have symmetrical effects. Like your purple sun can fuck you over as much as it fucks over the other player. And you need to roll well to get it on the board in the first place. And you've spent points on it. There's a lot of downside, which is why I think their points values are already pretty low, but I would probably make them even lower.
Oh, interesting.
Because I think most, even the ones that are like, people say like, oh, that's really good, it's just really hard to cast a lot of them.
That was actually something that I should actually mention too, like when doing this, is like there needs to be like more 10 and 15 point things in the game that you could just use to fill.
Yes, there's a serious lack of filler. Well, one of the nice things now is that they have the 50 point command point filler, which I really like.
Yeah,
because I had a lot of lists where I'm just like, fuck, I've got like 65 points left
and
over.
And they can't do shit with
can't
it.
Can't do anything
yeah.
with that. It's like, oh, now I get a command point. So like, that's not that bad. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Like yeah. I can use that.
Yeah.
Because like using the command point, like at the very least, using the command point to make your run a 6. Super worth it. Like, there's like, oh yeah, I'll make this run a 6. Yeah. I'm gonna get you.
I'm gonna get you.
I'm gonna get you.
I'm gonna get you.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the state of Age of Sigmar right now. It's I tell you guys, if you have an old fantasy army out there and you haven't
tried
it yet,
get it on some circle bases, man.
You don't have to get it on
they
circle bases.
You have to get it on circle bases.
Just give it a try. I think the game works really well. And
it's not that hard to rebase. Yeah. Rebase.
And actually, the more I've been playing, the more I realize it just kind of open play, it's fine. It's like, if you play open play with the points costs, it's fine. I mean, it's never going to be super balanced, but if you want to throw your big guys out there on the open play, just play with whatever you got. It's fine. 99% of the time, if a guy's like, oh yeah, let's just play open play, and you play on it, like let's play 3,000 point open play, it's gonna be kind of fun.
Yeah, you're doing quasi open. That's like it's fixed open.
That's what it should be. I mean, like, I think that's what they should change open to, in all honesty. But anyway,
just no selection restrictions, just points.
Yeah.
Just like flat. And be like, you want to have 3,000 points of just bloodthirsters. Sure.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that would be a better thing. Just call it fixed open.
Yeah. Then fixed open, pure open.
Yes. There you go. Fixed open, pure open. I like that.
We got 40K. 40K currently right now is getting back to super competitiveness.
It's almost done, isn't it? Like every army?
The current Codex list is almost complete. I know Gene Stealers is on the way. Gene Stealers is not out yet. But yeah, so it's currently coming to a close in terms of all armies will have their codexes, which means that the next kind of story progression is going to happen. I think that's what they're doing with 40K right now, is like they're doing more story progression within the edition. So 8th edition, we've seen the return of Rebute, Gilliman.
Rebute! Robooty.
Yeah, the Return of the Primarchs is essentially what 8th edition is all about. How are you going to center your army? How is this guy going to buff the rest of your army? And a lot of the command point, how do command points are going to affect your army? This army is more about, in this game, this edition is more about soup, which is a term that we're throwing around there. Soup is basically because you got a big pot and you throw a bunch of shit in there.
Although I heard the most recent FAQ kind of killed that.
The FAQ kind of killed that.
Yeah.
A little bit. It's, so there's still major kind of, because the way that you're building the soup is that you build the soup based off of smaller I guess formations within your army, and each formation size gives you a certain number of command points. So what they were doing is that like big formations give you a shit ton of command points, which is great if you have a smaller one that can use those command points and deal a lot of damage. So yeah. What they were doing is you
give it all to the Titan.
You give the Fighting 32, which is a guard formation, out on the table. It gives you like a bajillion command points. You put that on your the big shooty Titan, make it invincible, and it just marches across the field and devastates everything. And then there was, so like the big one was the Imperial Guard one, a smaller Space Marine with like a slam captain who was amazing, and then the big shooty Titan. That was the one that dominated for about 6 months. It was like that was the list that everybody copied and everyone brought and everyone won with. But the last FAQ kind of changed it up, so you can't throw those command points on the big Titan, or you have to use it on whatever.
Yeah, you have to use the command points on what's bringing the command points now.
Yeah.
So you can't use your 30 guard command points on anything other than your guard.
The Fighting 32 is still a legit formation, and people are still bringing it.
Yeah,
it's still dealing a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Titans are still fucking insane.
That's the thing, too. Like, all of this stuff is still good.
Yeah. And here's the thing with Imperial Knights is that when you put it on the table, you have an Imperial Knights formation of like three knights out there. If you don't have anti-tank in your army or enough anti-tank, they're still going to march across the table and beat the shit out of you, unless they get extremely lucky. So Imperial Knights are still kind of dominating the meta because they're almost anti-meta.
I want Orc Stompers.
Well, the Orcs showed up and they actually placed in their first tournament, but it wasn't the Speed Freaks list. I believe it was post-FAQ, pre-Speed Freaks, they actually placed in a tournament.
Okay.
And did pretty well. However, the tournament wouldn't let you take formations from a different codex.
That's weird.
So it had to be a pure orc army, but it could have different formations of orcs in there. Hmm. It couldn't have, like, orcs and Eldar in your army.
Okay.
I don't even know if you can do that. I don't pay enough 40K attention
to that. I don't believe
that.
Orcs and Eldar work together.
Yes, but the Dark Eldar right now are fucking broken.
Yes.
Now, I should say they're fucking broken. They're doing really well with the current meta.
Yeah.
So that's what you should be looking at currently.
They were always historically really good at anti-tank, so if the best other stuff is tank, then they would be poised to shit on the meta.
I mean, as much as I have only been playing very little of it, I've been mostly painting and playing and just kind of following what's going on, I'm really enjoying this new edition. And I haven't enjoyed 40K ever.
I just like Sigmar, so
yeah.
I'm good.
I mean, like, but what I'm saying is like, since probably 3rd, 4th edition, I haven't really enjoyed 40K. I definitely 5th, 6th, and 7th, I was not like, oh, I can't wait to play 40K. No, never. But this edition, I'm kind of just enjoying the way that the thing is progressing. I like the fact that Games Workshop is being responsive and with the FAQs and the General's Compendium.
Well, as Steve Irwin said, I'd rather be stung to death by stingrays than play a baby's game like 40K.
And then he died.
Yeah, I mean.
And he never played 40K.
It's true.
What army would Steve Irwin play if he played 40K?
Kroot.
Kroot?
Not even a question.
I think he'd play orcs.
No.
Kroot. I think all Australians, aren't they required under law
no.
to play orcs?
He would 100% play Kroot, and he'd have a fuck ton of Kroot hounds. He'd have like he'd be that guy who has like the like $4,000 of metal Kroot hounds.
Yeah.
That would be Steve Irwin.
Well, as a pseudo celebrity, well, I shouldn't say pseudo, as a celebrity of Australia, he'd be one of the few people who could afford to play 40K in Australia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, when I said $4,000 worth of Kroot hounds, I meant Australian dollars, so he'd have like 10.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, still, like, in Australia, it'd be like, wow, that guy has 10 Kroot hounds.
Yeah. I mean, him and Paul Hogan, but mainly because Paul Hogan doesn't pay his taxes.
That's Crocodile Dundee?
Yes.
Nice.
He got in trouble for not paying his taxes.
I see you've played Knifey Spoonie before.
Classic.
$900 dues. The boot.
I like how all of our Australian knowledge is based off the 1980s.
And The Simpsons.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess Simpsons was early 90s.
Yeah.
The Australia episode.
Although Crocodile Dundee was definitely 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck it. I love the original Crocodile Dundee. It's a good movie. It holds up.
I haven't seen it in I haven't seen it since I was very young.
I think I talked about this on Comic Book Logic. I don't know if I talked about it on this podcast, but Crocodile Dundee should have been the template for the first Thor movie. It should have been
a fish out of water
story. Like, Thor comes down. He's this big badass warrior in Asgard. He comes down here and he just doesn't know how to act
Well, the best parts of Thor is that when he's at the diner and he's like smashing the cup and he's like, it's good, I'll have another.
That's what it should have been more of. And they didn't do that. And they made Thor a mess. And people are still like, I like the original Thor movie. I go, do you? Do you really? When was the last time you watched that movie? What do you like about that movie?
Skarsgård.
Yeah,
he's very charismatic, so a lot of his scenes are very good, and people remember the stuff they like. Because I think a lot of movies, like especially Thor, is a good example of a movie that I think has a few very memorable like a good moment, but it doesn't have anything that's particularly atrocious, other than like being like very average to subpar.
I think
so. People remember that they think it was really good when their actual like they should just say it wasn't shitty.
They just remember Kat Dennings' boobs.
Yeah, and also like it wasn't like objectively like a shit show. Like it wasn't like Green Lantern where there's just like there is just nonsense going on everywhere.
Yeah, I'll agree to that. However, I think
he fights a cloud.
I think
that was in the hero fights a cloud genre. That was a. There was Fantastic Four where they fought a cloud. Then
you
Incredible
gotta,
Hulk. They
you gotta
fought
remember
a cloud.
That's before people before Hollywood realized it's like, oh, if we just do what people remember, they'll like the movie. Like if we just do it the way that they remember it in the comic book, they'll like it. And they're like, no, we couldn't have them fighting Galactus because fighting a giant guy in outer space,
a giant purple guy, that's dumb.
That's stupid,
dude. Everyone wants to see a giant purple.
Everybody wanted to see the giant purple guy in outer space. If the giant purple, like if it had shown up as a cloud, came to the planet,
and then Galactus
and came
out
of
the cloud, yes.
Holy shit, people would have just been like in the theater, like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like massive, just like strings of cum flying out of the seats.
That's the thing, because the vast, vast, vast majority of people who are watching comic book movies in the theater don't read comics, never read comics, don't read comics, won't read comics.
Yeah.
But there's so much like ambient information that comes your way. Maybe you saw like an animated series. Like I know a ton of people who like their knowledge of the Fantastic Four is from whatever episodes of the cartoon in
on
the 90s.
Outer space adventure.
Right, they were hit by cosmic rays.
They were hit by cosmic rays.
And the four would change forever.
And the four would change forever.
In the most fantastic ways.
In the most fantastic ways.
No need to fear. They're here.
Just call for four. Boop. Fantastic Four. Boop,
Reed Richards is elastic. Sue
can fade
from
sight.
Johnny's the human torch.
And the thing just loves to fight.
Call for four. Fantastic Four.
That's a great song.
most people like they at least have some knowledge of Fantastic Four, but it's from that. So like I know this.
Wait, I want to stop for just a second. Someone got paid to write that song. And it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean the early 90s and 80s cartoon theme songs are
like how John.
I mean Ulysses was pretty good. That Ulysses travels through the galaxy.
I don't know if you watch it. Have you watched the new She-Ra cartoon at all?
I haven't.
No. So I've been watching it with my daughter. It does have like a pretty good.
It doesn't have She-Ra.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have the old theme, but it does. It has like a kind of a. It is a little bit of a 90s vibe where it's like it says like. Like
is she still fighting Hordak?
She is fighting Hordak in the Horde.
Is he still badass?
He's only showed up a little bit so far, so I don't know him
too much. I remember that was one thing I distinctly remember about She-Ra from when I was younger is that like fucking Hordak was awesome. Like he was way cooler than Skeletor.
No way, Skeletor's fist came out of a mirror and then punched the mirror.
Stop it, He-Man.
That tickles.
Yeah.
I love Skeletor.
No, Skeletor's fucking hilarious, okay. But Hordak is cool.
As long as we're on this, and I know I got to get back to our odd topic, but I wanted to talk about this. So She-Ra, it's definitely Cal Art style where it's, you know, like Steven Universe. It's very
rounded.
Very rounded.
Rounded.
I really enjoy the art style. I think it works really well for She-Ra.
It's fine.
And what the one of the things
the only people butthurt about that art style are all fucking right-wing douchebags anyway.
Yeah.
They're like, women can't draw cartoons.
Yeah,
so. It's called fucking She-Ra.
So when you think of He-Man and She-Ra, what's the one thing that you really think about?
Cheesy fucking dialogue.
Besides the cheesy fucking dialogue.
Toys.
I think of homoeroticism.
Okay, I mean, I don't think that I don't think that for She-Ra, but for
He-Man,
absolutely.
For sure. Okay,
like, when he's trying to open that tank, and it's just like there's like many shots of his ass. Like,
so I can't get it in there.
I mean, I can't say for sure, but I think part of the reason, you know, I've always been very accepting of alternative lifestyles is because, you know, just exposure. In cartoons.
That's usually the case for most everyone.
If you
grow up and you realize that things aren't actually different and they're not weird, then you don't
exactly.
think that they're different and weird.
So, but now that once you get older and you realize that He-Man is very homoerotic, you're like, oh, maybe that's just maybe
fabulous
it was just very
secret powers were granted to me.
Maybe it's just like subtle. Maybe it's something I just never realized as a kid. And as I grew up and just like, oh, okay. So it was kind of brainwashing, but in a good way. You know, it's like okay, I don't think
exposing you to things that exist is brainwashing.
I know, but I mean like
I would say vehemently claiming that things that just are not real, that's brainwashing.
Okay, maybe. But I'm maybe brainwashing I'm thinking like subliminal. Like maybe that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Subliminally telling me this is okay. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's fine.
I mean, Prince Adam wore fucking tight as shit white spandex pants and the fucking pleated
pink
vest.
And you know what else? He pulled it off.
He did. And he had that bowl cut.
Yeah.
And he looked fabulous.
Page boy cut.
That's right. He had a page boy cut. And he looked fabulous with it.
So anyway, there's a... I'm watching She-Ra and it's like it's missing that. Just a little bit. It's missing that kind of like... That 80s homoeroticism in there.
I never thought that was a really big feature of She-Ra.
Well, I never watched She-Ra when I was growing up. I only watched
He-Man.
I have
the faintest memory of it.
So anyway, I'm watching this, and then episode 5 shows up, and it's called the Seagate, right? And they have to take a boat to this other. So they go to the CD bar, and they find this character. I'm gonna see if I can pull up his name. It's great. I wish I had pulled this up sooner before, but I wasn't thinking about it.
Now you got She-Ra on the brain.
Yes. By the way, Majulak is in this as well.
Majulak.
Majulak. Oh, God.
Many faces? You guard the hallway because
you
have
many
faces.
I don't have this guy. This guy's name isn't on here, but I think his name was Seahawk.
Okay.
And they meet him in a bar. He's beating guys at arm wrestling, and he comes out, and he has a fabulous mustache.
Nice.
Open, like his shirt has like a huge V-neck with like holes cut into it so you could see like the rest of his
body.
Oh,
nice, like Shipwreck.
He looks like the He-Man version of Shipwreck.
Awesome.
And he's got an ascot on.
That's
and
badass.
Like a little sailor hat. And I'm like,
he's Shipwreck.
I'm like, what's that? It's not like a sailor. It's not like a
he's
traditional.
He-Man Shipwreck.
He's got like just a little hat on. Yeah. And I'm like, this is everything I wanted in this cartoon right now.
That's awesome.
And he's like, I'm super fabulous. I'm the greatest sailor known to mankind. I'm like, fuck yes. Fuck yes on every single...
That's
this
awesome.
Guy, he needs to have a spinoff where he takes his boat and goes on adventures. I want to see this.
Nice.
Yes. And that's what I'm sitting there going like, this is what She-Ra needed. She-Ra needed that kind of like...
that guy.
She-Ra needed that 80s flair to it. Like... You know, he doesn't need to be gay outright because he's not. It's a kid's cartoon still. You know, they don't talk about sexuality
in
a kid's cartoon.
He's just fabulous.
This isn't like
hey,
yeah.
He could be fabulous and not gay.
Yes, exactly. They needed fabulous 80s characters in this, and that's what it was missing.
That's stereotyping. You could be fabulous and not gay.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
However, this guy, he's 80s fabulous.
That's fine.
Yeah. This guy's like Freddie Mercury. That's what he kind of looks like. He's got his mustache isn't like a standard
that's pretty cool.
It isn't a man at arms mustache. It's got the little points on
okay,
the end of it.
Freddie Mercury has a man at arms mustache.
Yes. But it's amazing, and I highly suggest watching it. It's got good lore to it.
You know what's weird? Was there ever a Highlander cartoon?
Yes.
Was there?
Yes, and
okay.
It's terrible.
Okay.
It's like Highlander 20 something or other. It takes place in the future. It's
that
awful.
Sounds awful.
Yeah.
All right.
It's like the Stargate cartoon.
But it wasn't about like Connor McCloud or anything.
No, it was okay. About some other McCloud.
Okay, lame.
Yeah, it was. I think it was done by the same company that did the Stargate cartoon, which was also terrible.
I didn't realize there was a Stargate cartoon.
Because it was fucking terrible. It was like Stargate 3089 or some stupid. They always put like numbers after it.
I watched a few episodes of the Star Trek cartoon, and like really,
I like the Star Trek.
Yeah,
cartoon.
Really bad animation, notwithstanding. It's actually pretty good.
No, it's like how Star Trek in the 60s should have been. It should have been a half hour show
and weird.
Yeah,
with
Giant Spock.
And I do like that they have more non-human characters because it's a cartoon. So they have that
they have
hot,
a furry
that fucking hot ass cat girl is on the bridge crew.
Yeah,
hell yeah.
And they got the alien, the furry voiced by Nichelle Nichols, and the other alien voiced by Jimmy Doohan. Jimmy Doohan did all the voices on that show.
Jimmy Doohan.
He just would do like random voices.
It's me, your friend, Jimmy Doohan.
Yeah, if there was a female character added onto the show, Nichelle Nichols would do all the voices. If it was a male alien, Jimmy Doohan would do all the voices. So we finished up 40K, we finished up Fantasy. Next one up, Lord of the Rings just got their new release.
A super successful new release.
Yeah.
They actually sold out of the core set.
Yeah.
I've seen in the wild stores that didn't have their product. Like, people bought it.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't buy any of the new stuff. However, I did buy a dog and named him Samwise. So I have a dog named Samwise now.
No, I mean, that's a Lord of the Rings thing.
Yeah. He's a good dog. He's a good boy. He's a beagle. But that's why we're recording today, because yesterday we adopted him. But yeah, the Lord of the Rings is getting released. People really like in the new rule set. They're re-releasing a lot of the stuff, including stuff that's been out of print for a long time.
And they're doing new versions. There's going to be the Forge World Swan Knights.
Yeah,
which is awesome because they were so rare and so expensive to buy the metal ones.
Yeah, they just released the two new characters.
They're doing a lot of
Gondor.
New stuff.
They're two Gondor characters. I hate the fucking sculpts on them though.
Well,
at least the one guy who's holding a sword in front of him.
Yeah, he looks cool.
I hate that fucking face they did on him.
Oh, his face. His pose is cool. I didn't look too close to the figure.
This was like a test model for someone, and they were like, let's just release this model. It's already sculpted, which is a Games Workshop thing that they do. They're just like, they take a random model, and we're like, eh, fuck it. We're just going to put this out there for that. Highly recommend, if you're into Lord of the Rings, if you have your old Lord of the Rings models, dust and get the new rule set. It's pretty solid, and I know there's people playing it right now.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of people playing it. They fixed a lot of the stuff that was like busted in the previous editions.
Army building is so cool now.
Army building's cool. They also really they standardized almost every character. So like there's no longer like 10 different versions of Boromir.
Yeah.
There's just Boromir. And you can like be like, Boromir can carry this or that. So like if you have Boromir the White Tower, he's holding the flag of Gondor. You just pay the points for Boromir and you give him the war gear for the flag.
Yeah.
And you just
WYSIWYG based on the war gear.
Right. Which is nice. It's nice to just have the single profiles for stuff. I'm super stoked. I'm very much looking forward to playing some fucking Mordor and Rohan shit.
Yeah. So you have all this nice.
My Riders of Rohan.
Yeah, you have some really nice stuff going on there, and the way that they changed the building system is that every character has a rank, and that rank allows them certain number of followers to be attached to them.
Right.
So if you have a low tier guy, he might only be able to bring like 5 extra dudes with him. If you have a high tier guy, he could bring like up to like 20 dudes, which is great. Except for you have to it's an exchange and point cost.
And they have the Balrog, who is one of the special rules, Flame of Undoon.
Flame of Undoon. Yeah, so that's why as I say, it's worth getting the rule set out for it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's definitely going to be a game I play a lot, I think. I was super impressed. I was like, oh, this is fucking sweet. And of course, the starter box is tremendous value. Like, money-wise, the amount of figures you get, plus you get the hardcover rule book. Great.
It's because the figures are shit. That's the reason why it's a tremendous value.
Look, we all know that you have a hatred for the Riders of Rohan.
The Riders of Rohan are bad.
I love the Riders of Rohan.
The Warriors of the Dead aren't great.
Everyone loves the Riders of Rohan except for you, Joe. Go back to Angmar.
All right. So, other games that the GW has got out, you have Blood Bowl, which is still putting out teams. Not that anything's really changing with that. I don't follow Blood Bowl too much, but I know it has its loyal following. It's doing great. It's killed off every other fantasy football game out there.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah, no one's playing Dreadball. The people who, if they moved over to a fantasy sports game because of the lack of support for Blood Bowl, they've gone back because Blood Bowl is a very well-supported game. The rules are fun. It's not quite what Steve and I are into when it comes to tabletop gaming. I think we kind of agree on that. Like, it's a little too beer and pretzel for us, which I do enjoy beer and pretzel on occasion. I'm sure if I brought the game out and me and Steve played it and Steve got a hold of the rules, he'd enjoy it, but it's not like something we would play
regularly.
There's
also a lot of like, what's the investment to play a beer and pretzels game is my big thing. Like if your beer and pretzels game is, requiring $1,000 investment to play a beer and pretzels game.
Yeah.
It's going to be a no from me, dog.
Blood Bowl doesn't.
Blood Bowl is cheap. That's one of the best things about it. Blood Bowl is like, the teams are, like, even by like workshop standards,
they're ludicrously good deal.
Ludicrously good deal. And like, you need one box.
Yeah, it's like you get 10 models in there, it's $30, and they're all a unique sculpt generally. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple.
And there's a, Nurgling eating a football.
There's an Nurgling eating a football. Yeah, and it's like all you need is the core set and your team. And if you want to, you can get the different pitches. You can get all the cheerleaders and everything else that you want. But you don't have to. It's just you get your team, you get the core set, and that's it. Or you just get the core set and play with the two teams that come in it. You know, but yep. if you're like, oh, no, I want to play the Dwarven Giants, like, you get those. You know, whatever. Necromunda, I wanted to apologize. As someone said, like, I was wrong on the last cast. I will put an asterisk on that Games Workshop did say it was the last gang released for the Dalax. However, there are plans in the future for doing non-gang hive gangers. Like, they're going to do, I guess, some of the Outland stuff. We did miss the Ratskins. They haven't done Ratskins yet, but that might come soon.
Were they considered? Were the Ratskins considered a core?
I don't know, but I always remembered, like, people love the Ratskin
models.
Because
they were busted. They were also super fucking busted.
Yeah. Well, not as busted as Spire.
Yeah.
I guess they're still doing stuff with the Necromunda. As far as it looks, it's like Forge World is going to be controlling all of the independent smaller games, all the beer and pretzel games. So Necromunda's a good system too. I played it. I like the way that it works. I like it with the boards. I think it works better with the boards. You could do some fun stuff with terrain still, but you know, whatever. And then I think the only other game that they got going on right now, at least in terms of tabletop miniatures, is Shadespire. And sad to say, Steve, not so enamored with Shadespire anymore with the Warhammer Underworlds.
I'm hopefully enamored with getting some money from it from eBay.
Yeah. Steve's selling off his stuff. I think he's doing it a little too soon.
I don't agree, Chet. I think now's the time. Because I think now is like there's enough stuff where if I wait any longer, I'm not going to be able to sell it in one lot.
No, you will not.
And I want to sell it in one lot.
Yeah.
It's just not. So it's billed as a competitive game, but that's just not. It's not there. Like it's not really. It's more like the issues. The issues are like around the game. Like there's no set tournament standard.
Yeah.
Tournaments are just making up their own fucking rules. There's like best of ones. There's tournaments not using. There's official Games Workshop store tournaments not using the official scoring rules. Yeah. And it's not like this is a one thing. Like it is a consistent issue.
Yeah,
there's score, like the game's base scoring system is already fundamentally flawed, like, because the way they do so in any game that uses Swiss pairings, you have a system for tiebreakers, and the way tiebreakers work is if any players played War Machine in a tournament, it's called strength of schedule. So if five players end the tournament undefeated, the only way to fairly tiebreak them is to go with their tiebreakers. And in Magic and in War Machine and Hordes, they just keep track of your win percentages versus your opponent's win percentages. So if I play Joe in the first round and I 2-0 Joe, and then Joe goes on to lose every other game he plays in the tournament, and then another player 2-0s their first round opponent, and that person, the person who got 2-0'd, goes on to beat every person they played. When me and this other player get squared up against each other on the rankings, he will have a better tiebreaker than me because the opponent he beat first did better. And that's what changes the percentages. And all it is keeping track of who wins how often. Did they win in two? Did they win in three? Like, is it a 2-1 or is it a 2-0? And you keep track of all the players. So the more players you beat, the better you're at. And then your tiebreaker gets better, the better the people you beat do.
Yeah. And it's actually one of the games where you want to be paired up against better players.
Normally, that's what you want in any competitive game. You want to play. You want to beat the best players. In Shadespire, the way they do the tiebreakers is glory differential, which is how much glory did you beat the person you played by. So that means that it has an inverted strength of schedule where you want to actually play against the worst possible players so you can score the most glory in addition to winning. So it has the reverse effect. So when they cut to the top, whoever has the highest glory differential is also the top, which doesn't mean that they're the best. It means that they've beat the worst people or had the best luck where they scored big numbers, which is like, it's kind of the opposite of what you want in a pairing system. And now this would, again, be a little bit more forgivable if they didn't cut to top two at Grand Tournament or at the Grand Clashes. Top two with that broken scoring system is an absurd way to cut your game, where it's like So that's why you always see like really weird at grand tournaments. That's why you can see really weird lists at the top, because it's like, that list shouldn't win a tournament. There's no way that list should win a tournament. And you're like, oh, okay. He played against soft people all day and had huge glory. Like, he got huge lucky glory scores.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you're playing a good, like, you could vary. And that's
which is part of the reason why Relics did so well, because it gives you a shit ton of
glory score. Right. Yeah. So, like, that's why you'd see the glory differentials at the end of those would be, like, the first place and the second place would be, like, plus 130 glory. And then the next person would be, like, 20.
Yeah.
So that's why the scores were so high, because they, and again, those guys got the reward of playing against people who couldn't stop them. So they got, you get boosted even higher. It's the rich get richer.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with that
score. What you're saying is that Shane Spire has been eliminating the middle class.
Yeah. The rich get richer is what I'm saying. Yeah. There's no, but the
can you be the Bernie Sanders of Shane Spire?
I can't. It's impossible. You can't change the system.
You can't
fight the system. So like the biggest issue is like, I don't like the concept of going to a tournament, going 8-0 and not being in the top, because you didn't body hard enough.
Yeah. But so let me then put the caveat on Steve's issues. One of the issues that I know at least I was having, and Steve agreed with me on, was that they needed to create a banned list.
Absolutely.
And they did.
They did.
Just recently. They banned three cards.
Yes.
One of them was Concussive Blast, which Steve says was...
Great Concussion.
Great Concussion, which...
By far the most broken card in the game. Needed to be banned a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So should probably have never been printed. It was that's how warping that card was.
Yeah, so there was three cards that they added onto there, and they also did a list of restricted cards. I think they put like 20-some cards on there.
Yeah, remember what I was talking about, where like that game needed... That was the list that's the Yu-Gi-Oh! Style, which I said. Like, you get a list of cards, and you can take that many from that list and use them. And that's the best way to balance that.
Yeah, and which is, I think, fine. I know
their list is sketchy as fuck, but sure.
Yeah, I also think, though, that you got to remember that they're not just pulling from... the Chicagoland meta. They're pulling from a lot of different metas.
So what they did is that, like, the quote unquote the list from the UK, which is where they have most of their data, because it has like it runs like a grand tournament every other week, is Farstriders.
Yeah.
And it's aggro Farstriders.
Okay.
So all of the cards that you see, like I'm looking at cards in the restricted list, I'm just like, what? Like, Pit Trap and Trap? Like, why the hell are those in the restricted? Because they really, really hammered that Farstrider list hard. Like, every one of those cards, like, almost the entire restricted list plus the ban list, if you look at all of those cards together, roughly, that was the Farstrider deck. Like, all together. Like, all of those cards, you stick them together. It was about the Farstrider deck. So no. that's really what they wanted to hit hard.
Now, I don't play competitive like Steve did. My way of changing it, which is, I still think that they need to do this, is they need to make a percentage of your deck needs to be the Warband-specific cards. And everyone I tell that to goes, oh, but they suck. I go, yeah, but then that would actually create a fair playing deck. Like, you have to find a way to make those cards good.
I think the problem with that is that the Warband cards are also kind of imbalanced. So you'd have like the Warbands are already pretty imbalanced. Like, there's a huge cut above for different Warbands.
Yeah, there's an A tier and a B tier.
And I think that would make the problem worse, because I think a lot of the better Warbands also have better cards. It's kind of like, oh no, now I have to use these shitty cards.
But I know with the banned Farstrider, with the restrictive deck, I know that Dwarves or Slayers are actually... kind of competitive again, from what I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, the lists that are hit the hardest are the old stall, like the Stormcast stall lists are pretty fucked over, and then Skaven take a lot of hits, and then Farstriders take a lot of hits.
You know what? Something else that they should have done, they should have made the Cataphrain Relics on the restrictive list. Like, if you could only take five of the six, there's six, right?
There are seven.
There's seven. There's seven. If you could only take five of the seven. Hey, guess what?
Yeah, I think they're happy with the two glory just like ruining them. The thing that's annoying though is that like they effectively banned those cards but didn't just ban them. So yeah. I'm like on that. I think with the restricted list, I think they should consider like bringing the relics back to see if it like, because if you put what they should do is they should put three of the relics on the restricted list. Just three. So you could play all seven if you want, but then you're using up three out of your five restricted.
That's actually not a bad idea
to do that.
I think that might be a good idea, and it would actually take care of having to have too many on the FAQ of like, oh, you got this, then you this,
because also a lot of the key ploys and objectives that allowed the Cataphrane's engine to work are also on the restricted list. So I think you could, you could at least give it a try again.
But I still think that they need to make a way of, they need to have a way of having people to play more of the Warband specific cards, because my overall be all end all fix, and I think you agree with it too, is that at the end of season two, all of season one's generic cards should just be banned.
Oh yeah, I was actually in favor of a rotation for season two.
Yeah,
like I think season two rotating all of the cards that all of the neutral cards that weren't reprinted in the season two thing, I would have been totally fine with that.
Yeah, I think having two seasons worth is okay
because the problem was is that the season two cards made the like it when all when the dust had cleared, all of the best.
Dust 47.
Yes, all of the best decks got better, and the and increased the gap between them and the next tier. So like the A tier decks versus. So what happened was is the A tier decks went to S tier, and the B tier decks stayed B tier.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened with the new stuff. So it was kind of like that's not really where you want to be. And I think if they would have done that full ban, it would have just been like. You might have actually had some shuffling between the A and B tier.
And also, what it would have done is it, and I should say it that way. I go, my thing is at the end of season two, just because that gives you some time for the season two warbands to come out. You actually can make some, you can have some decks out playing before you they get. But at the end of season two, if they don't ban the generic season one cards,
the barrier to entry.
The barrier to entry is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it's going
to
be huge.
Because right now, you have 8 warbands that you have to buy to get just the season one cards.
Yeah, and most warbands have at least, give or take, one staple.
So $240 just to buy the season one. Season two is going to be the exact same way. That's another $240. That's $480 just to become competitive entering into season three. Mm-hmm.
Hey, there's a complete collection that's going on eBay right now for $400.
For $400.
The Supreme Warhammer Underworlds.
Yeah. I mean, so collection. If you want to buy Steve's stuff.
And 3 trophies.
Steve has a shit ton of stuff that he's selling. I can't believe you're selling the trophies, too.
Oh, I'm selling the trophies, baby.
Yeah, you're selling everything.
Hey, maybe someone can run a tournament.
Yeah. And yeah, if you wanted to run a tournament at your local game store, it's a good way of doing it. It's good price support.
Yeah, buy my stuff. You'll have a bunch of painted warbands. You'll have a shit ton of variants and 3 trophies. Yeah. You can run tournaments.
You got dice that you can give away.
I know the tournament kit costs like a hundo. So
it's like four tournament kits.
Yeah.
Okay. So go to planetarbitrary.com for all your Planet Arbitrary needs. You can follow me on Twitter at Planet Arbitrary. You can follow Steve at
I'm Commandthro.
You can like our Facebook page /GameClassyPodcast. Best way you could help out the podcast is like, comment, subscribe on iTunes. You could also like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes. You could also listen to our sister casts. You have the Play On podcast where Steve and Pat jerk each other off about Red Dead Redemption 2.
No, that's not me. I haven't played Red Dead Redemption.
Have you played Fallout 76?
I am playing Fallout 76.
Is it good?
I fucking love it.
Oh, that's good.
So here's my quick review of Fallout 76. If you liked the base building and wandering of Fallout 4, but didn't like that it was pointless, you will very much like Fallout 76. That's what it is. It's not it's the wandering and like collecting shit and building cool bases of Fallout 4, but there's a reason. Because building bases actually matters.
You got to rebuild West Virginia.
Yeah, that's right.
They should just
Mount Mama take home country road.
Yeah. Yes. You can also listen to Deconstructing Daycare, where Pat talks with his co-hosts about cartoons, kid cartoons, and how absurd they are. Steve, we covered all the Games Workshop stuff, right? We didn't miss any games.
We got Necromunda.
Blood Bowl.
The only thing we skipped were the games that aren't games, like the box games, like Speed Freak and Blackstone Fortress. I guess we mentioned that. Someone said I heard someone say that like Blackstone Fortress wasn't going to be big, and I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Blackstone Fortress is amazing, but it's just Warhammer Quest.
Yeah, but it's 40K, and it's the models 40K. Are great, and like it's selling like fucking.
Well, first of all,
bust gangers.
Yeah, let's at the end of the podcast, if people stuck around, I'm just going to put this on there. Fucking the models in Blackstone Fortress are unbelievably cool. It's added so much to actually the 40K lore in and of itself. You get 2 new Chaos Space Marines, including a new Chaos Space Marine Commander, which are fucking awesome. You get Traitor Guard, like a full fucking, you know, 20-man Traitor Guard army, which is great. Like, just a couple of those makes it worthwhile. You could do a Traitor, like, if they do a Lost to the Damned army and they don't use those models, they're fucking stupid. And the hero characters are amazing. They're so flavorful. I don't like the board as much because they kind of use like a hex-based board as opposed to like the Warhammer Quest. You know, here's a hallway. Here's this. Here's that. Like, I don't like that as much. But aside from that,
I was just followed on Twitter by a Japanese miniatures game store. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it also comes with like a cool little like bags for your character cards, so that the characters, you can actually put the cards in the bags with the character model, and you could bring that with you if you go play it at someone else's house. So like if you're going to a local game store and you want to have your special character that you painted up and you've been playing with play in the Blackstone Fortress, you can do that. It's kind of neat. But aside from that, yeah, I'm not covering the big box games because those are not designed to be actually played. Those are designed to sell models. Like the game inside them is incidental. Sometimes yeah. They're fun, but
some of them are randomly good, but yeah. they're not really
like the chance of them being good has very little to do with the actual design of the game.
Yeah.
It has more to do with luck.
It's true.
So Steve, until next time,
Warhammer Preo.
Okay.
That was someone
Game Classy.